3:05, Jeff Katz, News Radio WRVA. It is Monday. It is hot. And we got a lot of material that we are going to have to get through this afternoon. Make no mistake about it. Chesterfield County Sheriff Carl Leonard is going to be with us in just about 30 minutes. The sheriff wants to address some of the, to put it mildly and politely, skewed coverage of what happened at the Chesterfield County Courthouse last week with the presence of ICE and what the sheriff describes as very unfair, perhaps even unprofessional television news coverage. But he'll be with us at 3:35 to discuss that. We at 5:05 are going to announce the first ever recipient of the Jan McTernan Legacy Award. Each and every month now, for going on the better part of a decade, we have presented the Lieutenant Jan McTernan Blue Friday Award. Every month we find a Central Virginia law enforcement officer, and we honor that person because of things they have done, they are doing, going above and beyond, representing truly the best of the badge. Well, the Jan McTernan Legacy Award is going to go above and beyond even the Lieutenant Jan McTernan Blue Friday honor. This is exclusively for a Central Virginia law enforcement officer who has served for more than 20 years, is eligible for retirement, and will leave behind a legacy to their respective agencies. It is not going to be presented on a frequent basis. It will not be presented more than once per year. That's it. The inaugural recipient was selected, and we recorded a great, great discussion with this person. There was a wonderful party that happened at the Radio Factory in honor of this person. And we will listen to that conversation at 5:05 this afternoon. Do not miss it. I should tell you that it's been a week of major victories, huge wins for President Trump. Win after win after win. And I have been thrilled looking at each of these victories. My gosh, just it really just seems every single solitary day there is another victory, another win for President Trump. If you've lost track of the wins, I will refresh your memory in a little bit, I promise you. I'm actually going to run down some of the big wins. If you are white, you probably will not want to live in New York City if, in fact, the communist Jew hater is elected mayor, because he said, well, I mean, even if you are non-white, I'm thinking you probably still won't want to live there, but white people in particular have already been identified by the Jewish communist, not Jewish communist, the Jewish Jew hating communist, as people who will pay higher taxes. He's decided that taxes, amongst other things, should be based on race. Does it get more bigoted? Does it get more racist? I don't think so, but he's going full steam ahead with it. It's crazy. It's absolutely absurd. But that is out there. We'll address that as well. Tom Tillis has turned out to be something of a turncoat. A senator from North Carolina. It pains me because I knew Tom Tillis 1,000 years ago when I lived and worked in Charlotte, North Carolina. But man, he has, I don't know exactly what it is that happened to him, but he's just gone off the rails, which I guess is okay in this respect. President Trump said, all right, well, you know, you do you, that's fine. But we are going to find somebody to run against you in the primary, somebody that actually cares about making America great again, that's going to look out for the benefit of this nation and help those people who would like to be helped. And then Tillis decided, well, I'm not going to run for re-election. Good. Good riddance. Happy to see you leave. If you could leave today, that would be great. You know, we're going to get a new president out at UVA. A new president for the University of Virginia. I am here to tell you that one of the questions must be, what will you do about the unhinged Larry Sabato? Larry Sabato, as you know, heads up the Larry Sabato Center for the Promotion of Larry Sabato at UVA and sucks in a huge amount of taxpayer money. Your money and my money. And he is unhinged, to put it politely. I think the man is deranged. Now, everybody has always known that he is a big time Democrat. That's not a shock. And I think everybody was willing to give him a little room to maneuver. Right? He is what it is. It's a little bit like that Jeff Shapiro over the Times Dispatch. I think he's finally retired, right? Is he gone? But Shapiro is a big time leftist, big time Democrat. And he was a political columnist, so he can have any political views that he wants. I don't begrudge him that. I think what was always annoying was when they tried to present him as a reporter as opposed to a columnist. Because he was never, not in recent history, a reporter. Maybe he was a reporter at some point. But certainly not in recent history. So why they presented him that way from the Times Dispatch, I don't know. But they did. As a columnist, you may not have agreed with his perspective. I certainly didn't. But he wasn't a bad writer. But everybody knew. He's a left-wing guy. He's a Democrat. Okay, well, now I know as I read his columns. Because they're opinion pieces. The more they tried to say, oh, well, he's actually a reporter. I think every once in a while he would say he was a reporter. And I could only say, well, no, you're not. Doesn't make you a bad guy. Just means clearly you're not a reporter. So anyway, Sabato has always been a Democrat. But he has gone so far off the rails and has, as you know, because we did actually report on this, he referred to Trump supporters, that includes me, as Nazis. So that being the case, it's time for him to go. It was time for him to go quite some time ago. But that Jim Ryan at UVA was clearly running interference for a fellow left-wing extremist in Sabato. So the new president of UVA, whoever that might be, the incoming president of Mr. Jefferson's University, must be asked directly by the UVA Board of Visitors, what is your position on Sabato? And if they pull this, oh, well, I don't know anything about it. I'm not there yet. Sorry, you're not qualified for the job. You're going to have to show up to this job interview knowing a thing or 10 about UVA. Now, you can tell us that you're not familiar with the nightlife in Charlottesville. Okay, I'll give you that one. But if you're going to be the new president of the University of Virginia, and you will not state on the record that you will absolutely, positively shut down that Sabato Center and kick Sabato off the payroll and off campus, then I got a problem with you. Simple as that. All right, what else have we got? Oh, I've got an update on the laptop. I've got an update on a few different things, actually. Let me remind you about the James River Air text line, 833-804-1140. 833-804-1140. You are always welcome to visit me over on the James River Air text line, 833-804-1140, 833-804-1140. Just about 20 minutes from now, my friend Chesterfield County Sheriff Carl Leonard's going to be here. If you want to get a sneak peek about what the sheriff will be addressing, you might want to head over to his Facebook page. Check it out. Check it out. He is none too happy with the manner in which Channel 8 covered what happened to the Chesterfield County Courthouse last week. And he's going to lay it all out for us. Looking forward to it. 3:15, Jeff Katz, News Radio WRVA. 3:20, Jeff Katz, News Radio WRVA. It is Monday, but it is a short week. We all know that, right? Coming up on Friday, Independence Day. Remember, that's the holiday. Remember, that's what we're celebrating. You know, we're going to have a 4th of... No. It's a date. It's a great date. It's a momentous date, historic date, fun date. I mean, whatever you want to say about it, that's great, but it is a date. Please don't remember why that particular date is important. Please, please, I beg of you, I beseech you. Remember why we are celebrating Independence Day, okay? It's my request of you. I know I get a little testy around certain holidays because people just lump stuff together or they dismiss it. Well, yeah, 4th, it's all about the 4th. I do love the 4th. You know, they don't have 4th of July anywhere else. Well, actually, they have 4th of July everywhere else. They don't have Independence Day on the 4th of July anywhere else. That's the point. 5:05 this afternoon, the first ever Jan McTernan Legacy Award. Somebody sent me a note on Facebook. It said, hey, Jeff, so excited to hear about this. Why keep the same name? Well, I didn't keep the same name. Our monthly award is the Lieutenant Jan McTernan Blue Friday Honor, and this particular award will be the Jan McTernan Legacy Award. Why would I honor exactly the same person, exactly the same woman? Because Jan McTernan was, how do I put it politely, one kick-ass lady. And she did so much for Central Virginia and did so much for law enforcement in Central Virginia that I think it's thoroughly, completely, totally deserved. And if you've listened for any period of time, you know that Jan was, she was like a second mom to me. So if I've got the opportunity to pay tribute to Jan McTernan, who I loved, I'm going to do it. And Jan really did leave behind a legacy. You cannot speak to anybody inside not just the Richmond Police Department, but essentially throughout law enforcement agencies in Central Virginia without getting positive reaction when you mention Jan. That's how big of an impact she made, and that's why we will continue with our monthly Lieutenant Jan McTernan Blue Friday honors. And those are for folks, just so we're clear, these are for people who every day are going out and doing the job. And they're not retiring. The Jan McTernan Legacy Award is specifically for someone who has the years in to retire. Some of them may be in the process of retiring. Some of them at some point may be people who say, well, I'm going to do another year or two. That's possible. But it's going to be such an exclusive club. And I'm going to call in some bigger names to help me choose the honorees again. I had help this time with this initial award. And we'll call in more big names in that law enforcement community to help the next time. We're ready to do one of these. The new fundraising effort for me and the Funding Fathers, the Fatherhood Foundation of Virginia, is underway. I will provide more details to you. We'll have Chris Beach on the program to talk a little bit about Dad Madness, which is what we're calling it. We have four teams. Obviously, Team Cats was the team that everybody wanted to be on, but we were limited. Just a handful of men made the cut to be on Team Cats. And what we are trying to do, all four teams in this respect are working together, working towards one common goal. We are trying collectively to raise $100,000 for the Fatherhood Foundation of Virginia as we celebrate the 10th anniversary of the Father Figure Award. Remember, I got that in 2021. And I'm not looking for any more awards, but I would like very much for Team Cats to put a whole bunch of money into the kitty for the Fatherhood Foundation of Virginia and help the group. It's my group. I mean, I'm part of it. I'm happy to be part of it. Celebrate. And you do understand that this money is used for the program. So, you know, every week I go and I teach the Inside Out class over at Pamunkey Regional Jail. It's not free. You know, the books cost money, the material costs money, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So we are going to need your help. I'll give you details. Chesterfield County Sheriff Carl Leonard, straight ahead. It's 325 Jeff Katz, News Radio, WRVA. 335 Jeff Katz, News Radio, WRVA. It is Monday. It's hot. We're at 92. We're looking for thunderstorms to come rolling through. And look, it's summertime in Central Virginia, so you know as well as I do, when we're in the 90s and humidity is in the 90s, there's always a chance for pop-up thunderstorms. But today, what I see, what's being reported anyway, is that there's a distinct chance that most of us will see some pretty heavy thunderstorms throughout the afternoon, the evening, and possibly through the overnight. Last week, you and I chatted quite a bit about the presence of ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, at the Chesterfield County Courthouse. And there was news coverage of it, but was the news coverage responsible? According to Chesterfield County Sheriff Carl Leonard, the news reporting from Channel 8 was absolutely irresponsible. And I'm happy to say the sheriff is joining us to talk a little bit about it. Sheriff, thank you for being here.
Hey, Jeff, thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
It's always good to talk with you. So just lay it out there for us. We've all heard about it. ICE was there. Got a couple of folks who were wanted by them, took them away. But the coverage of it, you say, simply, especially with Channel 8, was not fair or professional.
Well, on a number of the different media outlets, the coverage wasn't fair. You know, they were naming this ICE raids at the Chesterfield Courthouse. Many of them were naming it ICE raids. Well, when two or three ICE agents come to your door, knock on your door and say, hey, we're ICE agents, and identify themselves, say, we have John Doe, we need to take John Doe with us, and they get John Doe and leave, that's not a raid, but that's how it was portrayed on many, many media outlets last week. But Channel 8, I think, really takes the cake with this, and it does infuriate me because, as you know, Jeff, this illegal alien deportation, detention topic is one that is extremely sensitive, and it's sensitive to people on both sides of the political spectrum. And knowing that, it is really incumbent upon us as reporters to report the facts and accurate information. But if you look at the story I posted on my Facebook page, it is titled ICE at Chesterfield Courthouse. And that banner is in bold capital letters, and it takes about a fifth, that's probably 20% of the screen. Yes. And several times throughout the telecast where they're talking about ICE at Chesterfield Courthouse, they're showing pictures of ICE agents doing these raids at some location somewhere else in the country. I don't know where. I just know it's not Chesterfield County. But it only serves to be inflammatory and incite people because they see that and they trust their news media. And they see this and they say, wow, look what they're doing at Chesterfield Courthouse. I would be incensed as well. But it's not true. It's not accurate. It's false reporting and it is deceitful and it's gutless.
I am looking at the images as you are speaking, and I want to urge everybody, I'll share them on my social media pages as well, but if you go to the Sheriff Carl Leonard page on Facebook, you can see these screenshots and the caption from Channel 8, Chesterfield Courthouse, ICE at Chesterfield Courthouse. And the images are interesting, and they are clearly ICE agents arresting people. But as the sheriff points out, for those of us from this area, if you look at him, you're going, I don't think that's Chesterfield. It doesn't look like the courthouse to me. I've been in the courthouse. That doesn't look like the inside of the courthouse either. Did you reach out to Channel 8 or any of these other outlets, Sheriff? And if so, what was the response?
I have not reached out, Jeff. Nothing productive comes out of those conversations. There's always an excuse here, an excuse there for why it happened. All they needed to do was put a little banner on here, just a disclaimer saying, you know, images are do not reflect Chesterfield Courthouse or what have you. And they did nothing. Their intent here was to portray that as my courthouse. And that's why some citizens get very upset with this. And I don't blame them for getting upset when you see these images, which are being portrayed as our courthouse, my courthouse. Yeah. It is just really gutless and deceitful reporting.
Chesterfield County Sheriff Carl Leonard is joining us. So, Carl, if you can and you don't mind, tell us exactly what did play out. What did it look like at the Chesterfield County Courthouse when ICE showed up?
Well, Jeff, if you would have been here for the 4 days they were here, it was Friday the week before and Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday of last week. If you would have been here and watched all the operations, you would have been bored out of your mind because it simply was not something that was overt or, over the top. We did have ICE agents come in, identify themselves with their proper credentials and badges. All of them were in plain clothes, none of them in any uniform, which all these pictures on Channel 8, by the way, depict ICE agents in uniform. And they came to us with a list of people, said, we have papers for these people for being illegally here in the country, and we need to detain them. And we said, fine, come on in, and they made the detentions. It was a total of 6 people on Friday, 6 people on Monday, 2 people on Tuesday, and 1 person on Wednesday, and that was the operation. A very peaceful operation. It was not done in the presence of anybody. It wasn't in our hallways or our lobbies or our parking lots. One was in the hallway of somebody who was outside, and that was done very peacefully and without incident. So that's the reality of this, and it wouldn't have made good news coverage at all because it was very boring.
It's interesting you mentioned that. Again, Chesterfield County Sheriff Carl Leonard joining us. Some of the news coverage also attempted to portray this as, well, not just over the top, but unprecedented and never been seen, never heard of this. And I thought, and I want you to either confirm or tell me I'm out of my mind, but every day of the week, doesn't the sheriff's office receive something from some agency somewhere saying, hey, we got a warrant for so-and-so, or we'd like to swing by and take this person for charges he or she is facing somewhere else? That's not unusual, is it?
Jeff, I've been sheriff for 12 years now. For 12 years, ICE has been coming to my jail, picking up people who were identified as being here illegally on a regular basis, as they have through jails and courthouses throughout Virginia. This is nothing new. What is new is they were doing this at the courthouse in a little bit larger number. 6 a day is a little bit larger than we've seen. But they've been doing this all along for 12 years. It is nothing new, just location changed from people incarcerated to people not incarcerated because they're out on bond or bail or their signature for crimes that occurred in Chesterfield County.
And again, these are folks who have a connection with the Chesterfield County law enforcement system. They are part of the court system. It's not ICE showing up and just hoping against hope that there's going to be somebody there they're looking for. They knew ahead of time, hey, these folks are on the docket. This is a good, efficient way to go and bring them into our custody.
All 15 of them were coming into court because they were defendants in court cases. Some traffic, some criminal, but all 15 were the person charged with a crime. They were coming to Chesterfield County for their court appearance. The court dockets you mentioned are open to the public. Anybody can go pull them up and see everybody who's coming to court tomorrow or next week if you wanted to. So that's public information. And, yes, all 15 of these were people who had been arrested for either a traffic or a criminal violation in Chesterfield County.
Chesterfield County Sheriff Carl Leonard joining us. Let me play devil's advocate for a second there, Sheriff. And what if I'm the guy at Channel 8 who says, well, you know, we don't have a lot of staffing, and we just figured we wouldn't be allowed into the courthouse, or we couldn't be in the parking lot to take video or photos. What would you say?
I would say that most of them were here in my parking lot all week long with their cameras and could have shown video footage from our actual courthouse during the actual time this was happening at any one of their newscasts. But here's what else I would say, Jeff. If you're not going to report anything accurately or truthfully, don't report it.
Absolutely. Well, I'm glad that you're standing up here. It is, to put it mildly, a rather unfair characterization of everyone involved in this. And it is about attracting eyeballs. It's about making it seem bigger than it was. Are there indications that ICE is headed back, or do they not let you know ahead of time?
No, I mean, we were getting notified the day before, but I think after talking to them last week, it ran its course here. I think they're on to different things now. I don't have any indication they're coming back to the courthouse. Now, mind you, as we talked about a little bit earlier, they do come and pick people up from the jail on a regular basis. They've been doing that for over a decade.
Fair enough. I appreciate you being here. I'm going to send people over to the Sheriff Carl Leonard page so they can take a look at not just the images, but also your addressing of those images. It's difficult because I tell you, looking at them, again, some of them, at least one of them is at night, and you're thinking, well, nobody has court at night, and that's clearly not Chesterfield. So I do appreciate you being here, and again, we'll send people to those pages to make sure they know the truth of what actually happened in Chesterfield County.
Absolutely, and that's just part of us trying to be transparent here. We're going to tell the truth and tell it exactly like it is. I never denied ICE was here from the beginning, and I'm here to just let everybody know what really is going on.
Excellent. Well, I appreciate that. Thank you, my friend. That is Carl Leonard. He is the sheriff of Chesterfield County. He's been sheriff for 12 years. And a pushback here, just trying to let everybody know that the images that were shared in this particular case by Channel 8 are not of the Chesterfield County Courthouse. And you can look at them. Again, if you're on Facebook, I would suggest you go to the Sheriff Carl Leonard page, the top of it, two deputy sheriffs on horseback in front of the courthouse, and also a photo of Sheriff Leonard in his, looks to be his Class A's, and you can see it. It is the top thing posted there. I will tell you as well that a lot of the coverage, not just the visuals, but also the wording that was dealing with this was also inappropriate. It was not reflective of what was really happening in Chesterfield. So if, in fact, you're going to run this and your chyron's going to say ICE at Chesterfield Courthouse, it would seem to me you'd want the images to be at Chesterfield Courthouse, right? That to me seems the most logical. Carl Leonard, the sheriff, says they were there all week, the TV crews. They easily could have shot the video of the courthouse, but that it wasn't all that exciting. And it wasn't outside. And it wasn't the ICE agents in any sort of a uniform. Everybody was plain clothes and everything was inside, and it was all without a lot of hullabaloo. So this certainly makes for better TV, but does not reflect, according to the sheriff, what actually happened. That's sad. It really is sad. Jeff Katz, News Radio, WRBA. 3:50, Jeff Katz, News Radio, WRVA. It is Monday. It is, what are we looking at here, 92? Nope, 94. All right, it's hot. It's hot. There's no other way to describe it. And the humidity is about the same, about 94. So not particularly comfortable. That's the way it's going to be for a little bit. Now, we should have some thunderstorms rolling in pretty soon. And those thunderstorms, I should point out to you, will be with us for the better part of the night, through the overnight, and all of that good stuff. Might be carrying on through the week, but it is what it is, right? We're talking about central Virginia. We're talking about 90 plus degrees all summer long for the most part, and humidity, and so we're going to get thunderstorms. 505, I will give you the details on the first ever Jan McTernan Legacy Award. You'll get to hear the conversation I had with the very first person to receive the Jan McTernan Legacy Award. It is going to be presented no more often than once per year. So this is 2025. We won't have anybody before 2026 who receives the Jan McTernan Legacy Award. I think you're going to be touched. You're going to be touched as you listen to that discussion at 5:05. Yes, we are going to be raising some money, helping out my friends at the Fatherhood Foundation of Virginia. We've got the 10th anniversary of the father figure this year. You know, we do that event. It's generally at the Diamond. But this year, for the 10th anniversary, it's actually going to be over at the Robbins Center at U of R. And we're doing it first time ever. Four teams. It's like the big basketball championship. So there are four teams. There's Team Cats and, I don't know, there's three other teams. But Team Cats and these other three collection. I mean, they're good guys over there. I can't commit their names to memory because, you know, why would I? But Team Cats wants to be a big part of this. The four teams are charged with raising $100,000. We've got about 4 weeks to get it done. That's it. These are the funds we need to do all the work we do the rest of the year. If you follow me, you know that I spend a lot of time over at Pamunkey Regional Jail. Every single week I go and teach a class once a week. It's called the Inside Out Dad Program. It is for the inmates who are fathers, and they have to commit to the program. It's about 14 weeks the way I run it. Instruction itself is 12 weeks, but I always have two extra weeks. Sometimes guys have to miss a day, and I won't let anybody graduate unless they have attended 12 classes. If they've got 11 classes and they didn't make it up, then they're going to have to come back. But it's not free. It's free to them, and my services are free. But the books are not free. It takes money to do that. It takes money to provide diapers to dads, because diapers are necessary. Dads change diapers, too. All of the other programming that we do with the Fatherhood Foundation, it's great stuff, but it ain't free. So for the next 4 weeks, it's just a straight-out ask. I got to tell you that. There's nothing fancy. I'm not doing any online auctions. We're just saying we need some bucks. That's it. So I'll give you more details as we head through this. Again, it's the next couple of weeks we're going to be doing. And then the big payoff is going to be in August at the Robbins Center. We still need a sponsor for our team jersey. Each of the four teams has NCAA basketball-style jerseys. So we need a sponsor. We have a space for a sponsor. Now, if your business is thinking, we could use some good publicity, well, this is great publicity. Are you kidding me? How great would that be to be on the right side of things, helping out dads throughout Virginia, helping out little kids, you know? So if you're interested, you let me know. I'm not going to do like a big-time commercial for it here, but I'm just telling you. Because there are a lot of people in business who are looking for ways to show that they're part of the community. This is a great one. Really is. You would be on our jerseys. You get a big table over there and all sorts of signage. I mean, it's pretty cool. So if you're a business person, you probably want to jump on that, quite frankly, before your competition jumps on it, because then, well, it's going to be too late, and that's not going to really be of any benefit to you. All right, after the 4 o'clock news, I'm going to give you the big update. A lot of people say, hey, all right, so did you get the computer fixed? Everything okay? I will give you the full report after the 4 o'clock news. Then I'll be looking for some feedback on the James River Air text line, 833-804-1140. Remember, first thing tomorrow morning, 6 a.m., my friend Rich Herrera will be here. Rich, the host of Richmond's Morning News, always great stuff with Rich. Don't want to miss it. 356, Jeff Katz, News Radio, WRVA. Jeff Katz, News Radio, WRVA. It is Monday. It's hot. It's going to stay hot and continue staying hot until, I don't know, fall. Somewhere around there. Pencil in, October? And then we won't have to tell you that it's hot. We'll tell you it's chilly. Until such time as it warms up and it gets hot again. You know, it's kind of the way this whole thing goes. These are called the seasons. Jeff, I believe this is climate change. You could call it that. We just, you know, call it the seasons. It's what it's always been. You have a season where stuff grows, and a season where stuff doesn't grow, and a season where you harvest stuff, and that's the extent of my farming knowledge. Thank you. But it is what it is. There's just nothing new here, is there? Really, it's toasty. But we do have some thunderstorms rolling in. They're going to be here momentarily, and they're going to be with us. Take a look at the latest, probably through the overnight. So first thing tomorrow morning, you ought to be listening to Richmond's Morning News with Rich Herrera anyway, starting at 6 a.m. But given the weather, and given that it's going to be a good soak and roads might be a little dicey, you'll especially want to tune in starting at 6. Quick reminder about the James River Air text line, 833-804-1140, 833-804-1140. Going to be more people out on the road than we've seen in a while. Why? Because gasoline prices are near record lows. It's good news. It's another win for President Trump and the team at the White House. All the hysteria and the hullabaloo, these tariffs are going to kill us, and he doesn't know what he's doing with tariffs. Did you see what had just happened with the tariffs and Canada? Canada decided they were imposing some sort of brand new digital tax on Americans. And President Trump said, I don't think it's a great idea. And the new Canadian prime minister said, well, I'm going to do it anyway. Okay. To which President Trump said, well, if that's the case and you don't want to actually have talks about tariffs anymore, then we're going to reinstitute the 25% tariffs. And you know what happened? Immediately, the prime minister of Canada said, we're getting rid of it. Don't you worry. Those tariffs went away. Another win in the Trump column. So what is the verdict on the computer? Dead. Dead as a doornail. That there you have it. Thank you, everybody. Remember your waiters and waitresses. I spent a morning today visiting a wide variety of local businesses. Why? Because I like local businesses. It's kind of what I do. I believe in local businesses. I started the day over with Brian Satterwhite at Aris Electrolux. The West End. I mean, we've got all sorts of Aris Electrolux stuff. We've got one vacuum cleaner that I swear costs more than my first car did, but it's going to be one of those things. One of the boys will inherit this thing, and they'll be thrilled. Or maybe their wives will be thrilled. Whoever's going to do the cleaning around their house will be thrilled, because you cannot kill the Electrolux. Every once in a while, you got to get it tuned up. And that's what happened. We had an even older one. So I took that in, hadn't been over there in a while. Ray Satterwhite, of course, was the heiress Electrolux guy for Central Virginia for, I don't know, 40 years, something like that. And his son Brian has now taken over the business, took it over when Ray passed away. So I was over there. We had to get, we're getting a little something done with one of them. And then from there, went over to Arts Automotive Service. Said, hey, guys, you're not going to believe this, but somehow, some way, on the driver's side front tire, I picked up a screw. Now, after everybody was done laughing at me and mocking me, I said, seriously, I did. There's a screw in the tire. I said, well, did it happen today? Were you driving through a construction zone? No, smart Alex, I was not, but there it is. I said, well, when did it happen? I said, it's a few days ago. Oh. Is it leaking? No, actually, it's not. Oh. And Danny, who was at the front counter, said, well, the best thing that could happen would be that maybe it just got caught in the tread, but as I got all hopeful, he said, yeah, that doesn't really happen all that. But it could, in theory, but it probably didn't, and hopefully we'll be able to patch it up. Do you know we hit that lottery number on that one? Because it was a small screw, got caught in the tread, did not even puncture the tire. So that goes in the Jeff Katz win category. But then I went and visited with Josh over at Nerds to Go. Nerds to Go is a collection of, nerds. And they work on computers. So I walked in. I called them ahead of time. They're like, oh, yeah, okay, great. And I handed over the laptop. The laptop itself is deceased. That simple. There's nothing else to say. He said, "Well, your hard drive is messed up, so that's not good. I know that." So I take the hard drive out, and I'm giving it to if it's okay with you. I'm going to give it to the folks we use for data recovery. And I said, "Yes, that is fine." And so that's where it is now, hopefully getting all the stuff that needs to be gotten. But the laptop itself is headed over to Tech for Troops, because as Josh at Nerds to Go said, your battery is also getting ready to die. And given the age of the computer, it is simply not worth fixing. You're gonna want to replace it. And I can give it back to you if you want, but just so you know, the battery is bad. And this needs to, no, I'm good. So that is headed over to a Tech for Troops. And you know the story of Tech for Troops, because we've had those guys on the air countless times. They take older computers or non-working computers, and they fix them. And then they get them out to veterans who need a computer of some sort. Period. End of story. That's it. There's no more complexities, no more details. So my laptop, which in all candor did serve me well for 5, 6, 7 years. I don't even know how old it was. I'm not happy about the stuff that at the moment is lost. I got family photos. I got business stuff. I got a lot of stuff in there. So I'm hoping the data recovery folks can actually recover the data. And and then I wound up my parade of visiting local businesses by going to Princess Cleaners in Ashland. They're always such nice people, and that's where I get my dry cleaning done. So there you have it, my cavalcade of local businesses. I love them all. Now the question to you is Mac or Windows, and I know that this thing just hits me. It's almost like a religious debate. On one side, you have Apple people. On the other side, you have everybody else, the non-Apple people. And Germ, before you start lecturing me and throwing things at me, let me just tell you what Josh from Nerds to Go had to say. When I said to him, I said, well, if my laptop is not salvageable, yes, get it to Tech for Troops, that's fine. But my next one, are you going to be able to take the information and put it into a Mac? And he said, well, why are you going to do that? I said, what do you mean? He said, well, why would you buy one of those? I said, well, I'm thinking about doing more video editing. And he went, oh. I said, well, that would be the only reason that anybody would actually want a Mac. And then he was asking me about the type of video editing, and I explained, you know, it's not destined for the big screen in Hollywood or anything like that. He suggested, Jeremy, just so you know, once again going with a Windows-based product, and he had a whole selection of good software suggestions. But he also showed me a laptop. And he said, you see the back of this? I said, yeah. He said, I can fix anything in there. I can replace anything in there. However, if you have an Apple product, everything is welded to the motherboard, and therefore it can only go back to Apple for repairs. Now, I don't know if that's true, Germ. I'm not telling you it is. But that was one of the things he said to me in suggesting that I would be just fine staying with a Windows-based product. So, my question to everyone, because everyone has got an opinion on this, and I want you to hit me up over on the James River Air text line, 833-804-1140, 833-804-1140. You're going to have to let me know. I am really, really, really going to study this and analyze this. I've got a lot of people clearly on the Apple side of things, with Jeremy and Craig Peterson and other folks whose opinions I respect. I'm not discounting them by any sense of the imagination, but I'm also looking at prices and things of that sort. So just let me know. Just let me know your thoughts. 833-804-1140, 833-804-1140. You hit me up over there, the James River Air text line. Suggestions, thoughts, etc. I would appreciate it. Coming up at 4:35. Speaking of money and expenses, Carl Carlson, my financial planner, my financial advisor, is going to be with us. Carl joins us every afternoon. We talk about money. We talk about getting you ready for some sort of retirement. And then at 5:05, the very first ever Jan McTernan Legacy Award winner. It is, it's going to put a big old smile on your face. 4:15, Jeff Katz, News Radio, WRBA. Jeff Katz, News Radio, WRBA. It is a Monday. Yeah. No, that's it. I just thought I'd share with you that it's Monday. Carl Carlson will be along at 4:35, we'll talk about what is and is not happening in the markets, how close you may be getting to financial freedom, financial independence. I know we talk about retirement. Invariably, everybody associates a number with that, an age with that. Here's the reality. You can be financially free long before you hit that age. That should be the goal as far as I'm concerned. Taking a look at the James River Air text line, 833-804-1140. I almost said tech line because that's kind of what it's looking like. 833-804-1140. 804, Jeff, I have both a Mac and Windows computer. I find the Mac operating system to be easier for some things like photo editing and such, but harder than Windows for other things, but I do feel more secure with the Mac product. Someone else says use a PC at work. I think they're inferior to Mac. If you buy a Mac, it will last you for 10 to 20 years. All right. Jeff, I've had an Apple product since the sixth grade. I graduated from high school in 84, and I've had three Apple computers in that time. They do last forever. Wow. Someone else says, I suggest you get the same type of computer as your son's. My grown children all have Apple products. They never have a problem. I have Lenovo with Microsoft and Windows. We cannot switch files without a huge problem. Photos and those types, blah, blah, blah. My sons don't share photos, so I don't think that's really a thing. I'm really seriously serious. I don't think it's a thing. My oldest son went to college, did not respond to 68 texts that my wife sent him. She was sure that he was dead. And by the time I spoke with him, he was thinking, man, I would have been better off being dead. But they don't send photos. They don't do anything. In fact, they're you know, here I thought I was part sloth, and now I'm looking at them going, gentlemen, please. You're disgusting even me. Which, let me tell you, that's not easy to do. Blah, 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 blah. Jeff, our computer tech told us exactly the same thing. We trust him. He suggested a Windows-based laptop as well because he can work on it. Made sense to us. Jeff, if you buy an Apple product, you must own a rainbow sticker. Ooh, okay. And Jeff, isn't it funny how this global warming always seems to subside in October? Yeah, ain't that a blip? I mean, really now, I just prefer to call it the seasons. It's really worked well, you know? Yeah. Coming up at 4:35, Carl Carlson. You do not want to miss him. Tomorrow morning, 6 a.m., Richmond's Morning News with Rich Herrera. You don't want to miss that either. 4:25, Jeff Katz, News Radio WRVA. 4:35, Jeff Katz, News Radio WRVA. It is Monday afternoon. It is toasty. We're still holding steady at about 93. We do have some thunderstorms that look to be rolling through at any time, may or may not impact us through the overnight. I'm taking a look quickly at the James River Air text line, 833-804-1140. Larry in Chesterfield says, hey, Jeff, I just got off the phone with the news director at Channel 8. The news director says the photos in that story were, quote, file photos. And of course, it wasn't said that the photos were file photos as part of the story. That's true. I told him what the good sheriff had to say. Keep up the good work. All right. Well, I appreciate that. And Sheriff Leonard called them out and said, you've got the these images and this Chiron, but, whew, man, it's just nothing related to the Chesterfield County Courthouse, even though the scroll at the bottom of your screen says Chesterfield Courthouse. Yeah, that's, well, the sheriff had some choice words for it. I think it's lazy more than anything else, to tell you the truth, but, you know, that's just me. All right. Speaking of lazy, you know when you can be lazy? If, in fact, you are financially independent and free. Yeah, and that's something you can do when you work with my friend and my financial advisor, financial planner, Carl Carlson from Carlson Financial. And we get a little tip just about every single week. We talk about how we're going to get you there closer. Today, we ended the month, apparently ended the month up. And Carl's got a little insight. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon, Jeff. Yes, we did end the month up, and today was another record high on the NASDAQ.
Wow. All right, so is That's this nice. two months in a row that we've been up?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's been good. We did have a couple that were down.
Yeah.
But now it's back up higher than it was before the drop. The big tariff scare.
Oh, interesting.
I know, okay. The one you were so scared of.
Well, I was told I had to be scared of it, so, you know, I just follow instructions, right? All right, I'm scared.
That's right.
And terrified.
That's right.
So what happened? Did these Trump tariffs work? Did the rest of the world say we're sorry, or everybody just kind of sucked it up and went on with their life?
I've been hearing a lot of media apologizing, saying they kind of got that wrong.
Yeah, my gosh.
That was just the strangest thing.
Yeah.
And I know you and I were talking back then that it's going to be good for the country.
Yeah.
And he's like probably one of the best guys that could ever do it. His negotiating skills are amazing.
It does seem like it's where, I mean, even the guy up in Canada's Mark Carney, the prime minister, came in with some sort of a digital tax for what, 72 hours before Trump said, well, okay, fine, we'll put the tariffs back. And he's like, no, it's a typo, Mr. President. I don't know what they were thinking, but it's gone, buddy. Don't worry about it.
Yep. Yeah, so that's and then it had to kind of prove itself through, I guess. I mean, just, and it had to prove itself out so boldly that things kind of turned around, market turned around. You're not getting, President Trump's not getting beat up anymore on it. Probably not going to get any praise on it, but.
Oh, you can count
I'll praise him.
Yeah, no, you and I will praise him, but other than that, yeah. He'll get nothing for it. That's true. What about this Jerome Powell? Because he's got, what, 10 months left on his term? President Trump has already said, look, you are not going to be reappointed, and we could really get this economy cooking if, in fact, you would do something about the interest rates. Does that push Powell to actually do something, or does it just make him more of an obstructionist?
I feel like it's more of the obstructionist viewpoint.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's been there 2 months too long. 10 months too long.
Yeah. Is there anything, Carl, do you
think not much you can do about it?
Is there anything the president can do to sort of blunt what Powell is or is not doing?
There is. There's some things that his Secretary of the Treasury could do and that they could do to make a little difference. It's just a little harder work than he would have wanted to have done. But just like fuel prices coming down.
Yes.
That's pretty awesome. I knew that would happen.
Yep.
Just, it didn't happen in the first 30 minutes that he was president, but... And I know he would have wanted it to, but it's gonna roll out, and that's gonna help a lot too. And that from the beginning, that was a pretty obvious reason for the huge inflation.
Right. Right.
And now, as that starts coming back down, that'll help, and then that'll help interest rates too, I think. So.
Okay. All right. Well, that.
Yeah.
That is good. What about the so-called Trump accounts? We're hearing about these. They're in this legislation, the one big beautiful bill, some sort of special savings account that they're attaching President Trump's name to. Do you know about that?
I do not.
Oh,
a Trump account.
Yeah, he
was. Is it being added to the by the Senate?
Yes.
Or was it, because I don't remember it being in there when Congress passed it.
Yeah, it's something that's, that they want to add to kind of give, I think, to younger couples, things of that sort. And I don't know that it's going to pass. It didn't sound like a terrible idea. It sounded it sounded okay as long as they were funded properly.
I wonder if that could, did that have anything to do with the giving a little extra bonus for people to have children?
I think that's what it is. I think that's what people are attaching.
That's that part of what they're calling. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't, that's not a bad idea.
Okay.
I mean, young people getting married and having kids, it's a little bit tough out there for them financially.
Yep. Yep.
That definitely helps. You and I know that. We had kids. It's hard in those early days.
Hey, I got news for you. It's not easy in the older days, you know?
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
My fridge is still being emptied by those two young men. Believe me. Anyway.
That's right.
July 4th is Independence Day. We talk about financial independence. Just give everybody a sense of that, Carl. I know we talk about retirement. People talk about retirement. They think numbers have to be 62 or 64 or 105 or whatever the age is this year. But financial independence really is something different, isn't it?
Yes, and it's about building your wealth and building your nest egg so that you don't have to work if you don't want to.
Yeah.
But if you want to do something different, change careers, or maybe you're just worn out because you've been working a assembly line for a lot of years, But you want to just be in the position where, hey, when I don't feel like working, I'm not going to work, or I'm going to do something different. And to get there, you have to build extra, what I would say probably in most people's minds, there, I would call it extra wealth.
Right.
And that's by getting your growth right with your growth stocks so that you've got an additional really nice pool of money there to be able to be financially free and not have to worry.
Yep. That was the goal that Heidi and I came in with, and I keep opening those Fidelity things going, hey, Carl made it so. That's good. I like that.
Looks good. You're going to see another one in about 12 days.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
So I'll wait for you, and I'll open it on the air again. How's that?
Perfect. Perfect.
All right. Hey, Carl, I always send people to connectwithcarlson.com so they can download that free retirement toolkit. They put some numbers in. Everybody's got questions after that. After they do that, what is the best way to get in touch with you or the team over there at Carlson Financial?
Two ways. One, through our website at carlsonfinancial.com, and the other, just give us a call at 844-CARLSON.
Fair enough. I appreciate you being
here.
And
until then, happy 4th of July to you and all your listeners.
Thank you, my friend. Very happy Independence Day as well. That is Carl Carlson, Carlson Financial. Always always appreciate chatting with Carl. I want to tell you that Carl's with us just about every single Monday. Oh, I forgot to ask him, Macro Windows. All right. Well, I'm asking you, Macro Windows, 833-804-1140, the James River Air text line, 833-804-1140. Coming up just 20 minutes from now, the first ever Jan McTernan Legacy Award. No, this is not the Lieutenant Jan McTernan Blue Friday honor. This is the Jan McTernan Legacy Award. It's totally different. It will not be presented any more often than once per year. And it is only for a Central Virginia law enforcement officer who has 20 plus years in and is eligible to retire and will be leaving a legacy behind at their agency. 445, Jeff Katz, News Radio WRVA. I wouldn't lie to you. I mean, it's food related. It is the Jeff Katz sandwich. 451, Jeff Katz, News Radio WRVA. It is Monday and it is toasty, and that's, well, it is what it is. I have to give you weather updates because, I have to give you weather updates, but who are we kidding? We all know. You want to hear something great? Jonathan Carl over on ABC News accidentally, inadvertently asked a question that was legitimate. I know. Okay, well. So we don't have the audio right now. We'll get it, not to worry, but I am going to let you know about it. You'll be able to go and get a head start, actually, if you go to The Jeff Katz Show over on Facebook. The Jeff Katz Show on Facebook. You can actually watch it. So Jonathan Carl doesn't ordinarily ask questions that are, you know, legitimate or insightful or well thought out. However, he had that Hakeem Jeffries on, I guess, probably Sunday, right? Today's Monday, so it must have been one of those Sunday talking head shows. I don't know. They all kind of look and sound the same to me at this point. But he did ask that Hakeem Jeffries about the Jew-hating communist who has now secured the Democrat Party's nomination for mayor in New York City. And rather than give an honest answer, a legitimate answer, this Hakeem Jeffries says, oh, well, I just don't really know the guy. Oh, I don't know the guy. Really? All right. Well, let's take a listen. We do have it now. Let's take a listen.
I'm joined now by House Democratic Leader Hakeem Jeffries of New York. Let's start with the big news, Leader Jeffries, out of your hometown. Mamdani won a big victory. Have you endorsed him yet?
I have not. We had a conversation on Wednesday morning. Where I congratulated him on the campaign that he ran, a campaign that clearly was relentlessly focused on the high cost of living in New York City and the economy. He outworked, he out-communicated, and he out-organized the opposition. And that's clearly why he was successful.
So what's holding you back from endorsing him right now?
Well, we don't really know each other well. Our districts don't overlap. I have never had a substantive conversation with him. And so that's the next step in terms of this process, to be able to sit down, which we agreed to do in Central Brooklyn, discuss his vision for moving the city forward and addressing the issues that are important to the communities that I represent, a very diverse district that I represent in Brooklyn, including many African Americans, many Jewish Americans, many Caribbean Americans who are dealing with a lot of challenges in the city and want to make sure that the next mayor of the city of New York, whoever that may be, is prepared to tackle them.
Interesting. Here's what I can actually tell you, just so you know. Some of the Democrats are terrified by this lunatic. And other Democrats are thinking, well, yeah, why, that's who we are. That's exactly what the party is. I would tell you that it is that latter group which is telling you the truth. Those are the folks that represent the Democrats in the year 2025. It's sad. I'll give you that one for sure. It is sad. I got to think that there are a lot of good, decent people who probably have spent their life supporting that party, voting for that party, being friendly towards that party, who are looking at it right about now and saying, what's happened? For me, as a former Democrat, I mean, grew up in Philadelphia, for God's sake. Everybody was a Democrat. It's a little bit like growing up in, you know, New York or Chicago or certain other places. But I had my Ronald Reagan moment. I think a lot of people now are going to have their Ronald Reagan moment, where they say, I didn't leave that party. That party left me. Because anybody in this day and age who is on board with that party is standing with people who want to tax white people more than black people, who are, well, calling to globalize the Intifada, who have demonstrated their hatred for Jews. I don't see how you can do it. 456, Jeff Katz, News Radio, WRVA. So, a couple of weeks ago, I was chatting with the training lieutenant over at the Richmond Police Department's training academy, and he mentioned to me that Acting Sergeant Richard McTernan was looking at retiring. He's got 20 years in and thinking, well, maybe it's time for the next chapter. And as I was chatting with Lieutenant McQuail, we both said almost at the same time, my gosh, it's going to be just about a half century then, when Richard leaves, that there will not be a McTernan in the Richmond Police Department. And we both thought, man, that is something worth talking about. So I'm very happy to say that Richard McTernan is joining us. We're going to chat a little bit about that. Sonny, thank you for being here, man.
Thank you for having me.
Let's talk a little bit about it, because you got 20 years that you've got in with the Richmond Police Department now. We'll talk about that, but it's this fact that it's almost a half century then. When you walk out those doors and you turn that badge in, man, it's going to be the first time in just about a half century that there is not a McTernan at the Richmond Police Department. So question number one, will RPD be able to survive without a McTernan on the payroll?
Absolutely, 100%. I have all the faith and confidence of the men and women who wear our shield in the city of Richmond.
All right.
They're in good hands.
Well, now that we've gotten that out of the way, let's talk a little bit about this time of service. I want to talk about first your mom, if you don't mind. As you know, I mean, I loved your folks.
Yeah, she loved you.
I loved your mom. Your mom told me so many wonderful stories about her desire to serve and having to drink milkshakes to make the minimum weight and stand on her tippy toes to make the minimum height, whether it was for the Marines or RPD, but she did it. And I'm curious, here you are 20 years into your career. You look back on what she did. What are your thoughts about Jan?
I can remember when, you know, I was very little when she started. I was 3 years old. This is 1983. You know, when you're that young, you don't really know what your parents do, period.
Right.
So as I was getting into elementary school, she would come home in the uniform and I'm putting it all together. And I didn't know how dangerous the job was. And then you get older. So now I'm maybe 10 or 11. You're kind of figuring out as best you can as a 10 or 11 year old how the world kind of works. And learning about where my mom was working at the time in the city of Richmond in the patrol capacity, that's probably when I started to like legitimately have like that worrisome feeling for your parent.
Sure.
I realized what she was doing and what was going on in the streets during that time here in the 80s and early 90s. So, but she never talked about it. Like she never came in and talked about work. She would field questions if you had, you know, the silly questions that young boys and teenagers have about police work.
Yeah.
But she left it there. And for the most part, she got into the detective side fairly early in her career. So I never really saw her in uniform for most of her career. She was always in plain clothes, or
right.
Detective or narcotics and regular people clothes. So that kind of helped put us at ease knowing that, not knowing that what she was still doing was very dangerous.
Yeah.
So she's not in a patrol uniform. She must be safe, right?
Because
it's not
right.
A uniform safe, right? Not realizing the dangers of all the different facets of law enforcement. But yeah, she pretty much left it at work, didn't bring it home with her. It wasn't really until I was coming out of the military at the time and trying to figure out what was I going to do as a young adult. Was I going to do law enforcement? Was I going to go back to college? I really didn't have any idea. And that's probably when my mother and I had like our first adult conversations about the job. So this is around 2004-ish. Then I came home from Iraq and I said, okay, I think that's what I want to do. I think I want to stay in service. You know, I was looking to get out of the Marine Corps because my wife and I were going to get married and we wanted to have kids and we wanted to kind of settle down where her family and my family are here at the time in Chesterfield.
Right.
So I was like, okay, that seems like a logical step. So she fielded all the questions I had about, you know, what the job looks like, you know, because we never really talked about growing up. I didn't know like academy, patrol,
sure.
And then you have to go through the arduous process of, you know, making a name for yourself to get into specialized units. And so it was all brand new to me, even though I had a mother who had been doing it for decades.
It's interesting. You're telling me that she didn't really talk about it. When she came home, she was just mom.
Yes.
Right? I mean, that was it. She's got three boys.
Yes.
She's got a husband. Everything that everybody else has. Right. Left that at work. In retrospect, you think that was a good thing?
I do. And what's funny is like, I didn't know what a big deal my mom was at the department until I became a recruit. And then everybody like officers, sergeant, anybody that's a part of our training that come and do the yelling and PTing of us, they're like saying, I'm going to embarrass my mother. Like, don't you do that? Like, and I'm like, I guess they would all know her. But it wasn't until I got on the street and I saw the respect the department had for my mother, whether that was the patrolman, sergeant, all the way up to the chief, like when they would make contact, how respectful they were when they spoke about my mother and, you know, the job that she was doing at the time.
Yeah.
And we got to work together for a little bit. We overlapped. Now, we didn't ride together or anything, but we would work together during the same time and meet for lunch when I was working patrol in Southside. Probably one of the funniest things that happened was my partner, Jason Holt, and I were in patrol. We see a guy that's wanted to get out, foot chase. We're calling it over the radio. It maybe goes like a minute or two, the foot chase. Get him, apprehend him. No big deal. No one's hurt. And when you're in a foot pursuit, the only people that have the air, the people chasing them on foot, right? Everybody's quiet. Nobody's chiming in.
Right.
So we get him in custody, clear the air. And my mom was the XO at 3rd Precinct at the time. She comes over. Her unit number, I think it was 302. She says, 302, 10-5, Officer McTernan. And I know it's my mom. I'm like, go ahead, Lieutenant. And she says, great job, son. I'm so proud of you. You're such a good little police officer. Everybody around us was dying laughing because people were showing up. So it was like 10 cops standing around. Everybody's just dying.
Oh,
and she's, all right, sweetie, going back to my channel. And they're just dying again. I was red in the face in front of my suspect. It was great.
I love that. It's, your mom's legacy, and we're talking about Jan McTernan, Lieutenant Jan McTernan, when she was at the Richmond Police Department, the legacy that she has established is incredible. You obviously have heard about it your entire career. others who have interacted with other members of the Richmond Police Department, and quite frankly, Richard, law enforcement in Central Virginia. If you mention Jan McTernan, their face lights up. They know exactly who you're talking about. And if you are of a certain age, guaranteed you have a Jan McTernan story.
Sure.
You've interacted with her. And they have all been, this is the part that blows me away, they are all positive. They had such a tremendous appreciation for what your mom did inside of RPD. I mean, even in terms of investigations, you're talking about being a detective, major crimes and homicide. She was a really solid detective.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Did she talk about any of the cases there, or was it again just, hey, that's the job and now I'm home?
No, that was kind of it.
Yeah.
She was mom when she was home. She wasn't detective, sergeant, or lieutenant, whatever her title was at the time when we were growing up. She just kind of left it there.
Yeah.
And, I think it was a good thing. So I think if she told me everything that happened at work or answered every single question I had about her day, I probably would have worried about her all more than I did before. And I
right.
think she didn't want that. She wanted me to concentrate on what we were doing. My brothers and I at the time in life. And
right.
I go to work. That's what I do. That's what I'm paid to do. I come home. Right. Because everybody, when somebody finds out you're a cop, they have a million stories. Right?
Yeah.
So
yeah. Yeah.
My dad and I, my mom were out and they're meeting people for the first time. They always ask what you do. My mom would say, you know, I'm a Richmond police officer. My dad would say, I'm a jet mechanic. They didn't care anything about jet mechanics. They wanted to know everything about police work.
Of course.
Right? So
of
just,
course.
That dynamic was always kind of funny to me.
Oh my gosh. Well, that is funny. So it's this legacy of service that your mom establishes. And you talked about your time in the Marines, just like your mom, just like your dad, just one of your brothers, United States Marine. What was involved in that? And you said you wound up in Iraq.
I did.
Yeah.
Yeah, we deployed my unit in early of 2005, came home mid 2006, spent the majority of our time working out of Camp Fallujah in the Fallujah area, doing a little bit of everything.
Yeah. Yeah. Was that before or after you had started the academy?
So I had started the academy in 2005. I was in the reserves at the time and they activated our reserve unit. So I literally finished the training academy and I was in California that next week.
Wow.
So I didn't even field train. So,
jeez.
So 6 months of basic recruit life as a senior Richmond police officer, deployed for a year, came back and FTO'd when I got back.
Wow.
And so a little bit of a learning curve because, you know, when you're new already, you don't really know what you don't know.
Yeah.
So, but you go from the academy to the streets.
Yeah.
Well, now I had a year removed from the streets. So jeez. I thank God that I had the two FTOs that I had that realized that and worked with me on it. They're actually still current Richmond police officers. So I'm very fortunate in that respect because I was like, I brain dumped quite a bit, to be honest, of what I learned in the academy because of the mission at hand that I was going to be doing for about the year. So like the paperwork stuff, totally forgot about. So they were very patient with me. When I was doing my 8 weeks of field training when I came
home. I love it. Well, that's great. You're out of the academy then. You're on the street. You've got your field training. Take me a little bit through your process because you talked about some of the specialty stuff, mm-hmm. right? I mean, you jump out squad, EOD maybe?
EOD.
Yeah, yeah. What? Take us through that a little bit because it's just fascinating to me to hear
sure.
about some of these different assignments. And I think everybody, again, as we talk about what the Clan McTernan has given to the Richmond Police sure. Department, I want them to hear a little bit.
Yeah, so I started out in night shift patrol. I was pretty fortunate as far as like going to day shift. I can't remember exactly how long I was in night shift. Wound up going to day shift, great relief. At the time, my sergeant was J.D. Ross. From daytime patrol, I went to the focus mission team, which is essentially the jump out squad.
Right.
At the time, I think I had 4 or 5 years on the department because when you were putting in for those units, that wasn't something you were getting like a year on the streets. Like you had to kind of establish yourself.
Yep.
So when the time came, I put in for it. I was fortunate enough to get it. And I spent about 6 years in that unit.
Wow.
With some really good team members, most of which are all still here. Most of them are supervisors now. There's some sergeants.
Okay.
Right? So to give you a level of like what kind of, you know, professionalism came out of that unit.
Yeah.
Like people building their careers here, right?
Absolutely.
It was a lot of fun. It went by really fast because you're on the go, from doing drug stuff, the prostitution stuff, following people around, looking for fugitives. It was great. Probably the best part was it was the first time I was all that facial hair. So I had a really big beard, really long hair, you know, so I looked really cool to myself. You know, my wife thought I looked like a dirtbag, but I thought I looked pretty cool. From there, I went to property crimes, investigating larcenies, burglaries, robberies, and then put in for the academy in 2019. And I've been there since. I'm currently the acting sergeant. I work with a great group of people over there at the training academy. All established in their fields from wherever they came from before they came to the academy.
Cause yeah.
If Lieutenant McCall hasn't told you, like, he's only putting the right people over there, right? And I don't have any say in who comes over, but
right.
My captain and lieutenant have put the right people in the right positions in that building.
It's funny you say that because both Captain Flippo and Lieutenant McQuail have said, you're the right person for the post you're in. And Steve, Lieutenant McQuail had actually said to me, you know, Richard is acting sergeant. We don't normally do something like that, but that was more than appropriate for you. That's pretty cool.
No, I've enjoyed it. And it's not sergeant by title alone. It's
right.
It's the fact that how much they trusted me to
right.
do the job. So
right.
you're not just responsible for the recruits. You're responsible, you know, whether you call it paperwork or mental health for the officers that work at the academy.
Yeah.
And for them to put me in that position and keep me there for the time that I've been in it, I have a very strong command structure that believes in my ability and my team's ability to do our jobs.
535, Jeff Katz, News Radio, WRVA. We are in the middle of a great conversation. Yes, it was pre-recorded about a week or so ago. It is me, obviously. And Acting Sergeant Richard McTernan from the Richmond Police Department Academy. And at this point in our conversation, all that Richard McTernan knows is that he is there to chat about the fact that he is now eligible for retirement. And everybody said, well, you know, if he leaves, it'll be the first time in darn near a half a century that there is not a McTernan serving RPD. And so we're just having a chat about this. And we record it. What he does not know is that in the other room, there is a serious operation underway bringing in all sorts of law enforcement officers from RPD and a few other agencies that are there to salute him. He has no idea that his lovely wife and their two children are being snuck into the building, and he has no idea that this legacy of which I speak, this Jan McTernan legacy, this Jan McTernan Legacy Award, is something we've already decided to present. And he's going to be the recipient of the first ever Jan McTernan Legacy Award. So pay close attention, because when he points out he's surprised, you can take it to the bank, he is surprised. Well, that's, again, I keep using the word legacy. I don't know why, it's just on my brain today, but that's part of this legacy, right? I mean, from Lieutenant McTernan to Acting Sergeant McTernan, down to those recruits in your basic school, they're getting an awful lot of not just instruction from the books from DCJS, but folks who have dedicated their lives to this profession we love.
Right. And I'm fortunate, like I said, to be in a position at the academy and, you know, kind of, I wouldn't say I mold them or we mold them. We get the right people in to teach these recruits while they're on their 7-month adventure to become a Richmond police officer. So we've been fortunate in that respect. We're very selective about who we have them have contact with.
Right.
Who's teaching what subject that they're learning that day. And it's been a pretty well old machine that we've had going over there for quite a while.
Wow. Tell me a little bit about the recruits, if you don't mind. You obviously everybody who's done the job at some point has been a recruit. We've all gone through the academy. We've all had folks that we thought, man, he looks like a nice guy until he's yelling at me or chasing me or telling me to do something. And those, maybe even the first couple of days, maybe the first couple of weeks, I at least for me, I didn't get it. I don't know why you're being so mean to me. I don't understand this. And by the time the end comes and somebody hands you that shield and you look at those very same people who a few months ago you were sure were just making your life miserable, you now realize, man, they're helping me not just be a cop at some point, but to stay safe and keep everybody else safe. I mean, it's an amazing sort of transition for those recruits, don't you think?
Yeah, you get a mixed group of individuals that want to do this job.
Yeah.
So all backgrounds, you name it. So when they start, it is a lot of intense, you could call it yelling, PT, physical training. But there's a reason we want them doing it together, how they're being told to do it by us, when they're supposed to be doing it, right? So there's a timeline of the way we want them to do things. And there are people who haven't maybe been talked to like that before.
Right.
Somebody yelling at them.
Yeah.
Right? Wanting them to work quickly under stress, right? Stress inoculation is what we call it. So you're being given a task, we're being loud, and we're trying to essentially just mess up your thought pattern. Like, can you do this while you're just being yelled at, right?
Yep.
So some take longer to get what we're doing than others to buy into what our profession is. Because I say this a lot, you don't know what you don't know. And I tell that to the recruits all the time because sometimes they want your approval. So they'll pull you aside and be like, how am I doing?
Yeah.
I'm saying, and I always get the same answer. You're right where you're supposed to be at.
There you go.
And I just walk away. So it kind of leaves them with nothing, but you know, there are no favorites.
That's right.
Either you're getting it faster than the first person is, and somebody's always trying to play catch up, right? So we're trying to bring all this together. High performers, we want the low performers looking up to, right? So until they get pulled up to where those high performer recruits are.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's the process. And by the end, when we have our simulated scenario training, you know, the essentially calls for service that they're going to see out there, you really start seeing them put that together. But I think the ultimate test is field training.
Yeah.
Because we can only simulate to some degree of the call volume, the fight in progress calls. But until you're legitimately putting hands on somebody, you have to take the jail that doesn't want to go.
Right.
You don't see that until field training.
That's right.
So we put them with the FTOs. They get 4 weeks with one, switch and go to the second FTO. And we've got some pretty powerful FTOs out there that won't hesitate to cut them if they're not making the grade.
Right.
They'll fail them. You know, we have, fortunately for them, some people have not made it through the process because they just couldn't put it all together.
Right.
And you have to be in real time, right? Because people get hurt, they get themselves hurt.
That's right.
Yeah, that's the process.
I love it. I love it. Richard McTernan is spending a couple of moments with us. Richard is the acting sergeant over at the Richmond Police Department Training Academy. 20 years of service now. We were talking about the legacy that is established with Richard's family as a result of his mom's service, Lieutenant Jan McTernan. A couple of years back, Rich, we had I got together with you and your brother Mike. We had done this Blue Friday thing for a couple of years. Your folks passed away. Your mom, again, when she passed away, I asked both of you guys if it would be okay to rename our Blue Friday honor in her memory. And I don't know if you remember distinctly, but I will never forget because the three of us sort of started laughing and we said, oh my God, she would hate that. She would be so flippin' angry,
yes,
right? She would have yelled.
Yes.
Yeah. And at some point she will.
Right.
At some point we're going to see her and she's going to say, how dare you?
Right.
Because her mindset was always, it's the mission, right?
It's the job. She didn't need your awards. She didn't need your citations. It was the job.
Yeah. And I got to tell you, it seems like you're kind of cut from the same cloth, man.
You've met my brother Michael. And we are a little bit different. A
little bit.
Yeah, I'm a little quiet and reserved. He's a little more like my father, a little say whatever comes to his head.
yeah.
Not much of a talker in general, so it's
yeah. Well,
a little different.
But you were probably well served for everything, training and then training others, because the great Santini was there kind of laying it down from day one.
Yes. I always joke with people who may not know that movie reference because of ages or whatnot, but the great Santini with Robert Duvall Michael and I laughed. They're like, what was it like growing up with your dad? I'm like, watch the Great Santini. That was my life. In a good way. I mean, that's the men we are, you know.
That's right.
Myself and my two brothers.
That's right. That's right. Well, Richard, I appreciate you coming in just to talk a little bit about this. And again, the legacy, the reason that I asked Richard in here and called you Sonny as well, just so everybody knows. I mean, you people who maybe know you a little bit better, it's Sonny, but just this this whole process that now 20 years in, and you are, right, you're qualified to retire. You could leave today if you wanted to.
Yes, sir.
And you're thinking now what could be the transition?
Yes, just trying to figure out my kind of next move there. And it's not that I have any love lost for law enforcement. I just, when I came onto the job, I kind of had, when I signed up for the retirement, I had this idea in my head, like, I'm going to do it, and I'm going to just try to do something different. So, because all I've really done since high school is military, police, and I was like, you know what, let's see if I can fit somewhere into the civilian sector and, and see what that lifestyle is kind of like. And, because I don't know when that'll happen.
Right.
It happened 3 months from now. It could happen next year. I just don't know when that time's going to come. We'll see what lines up, but I'm excited for the next chapter. You know, I have a lot of close people that have retired from the department, and they're doing great things out in, I keep saying civilian world. They're no longer in law enforcement. They're doing different jobs, civilian jobs.
Yeah.
And, you know, I want that kind of peace of mind that they have. You know, they did their time. Let's see what the other side of the coin looks like now.
Yeah. Right?
Because there's plenty of capable law enforcement out there that can still protect me.
Right? That's right. That's right.
I live in Prince George County. I have all the faith and confidence in them. If I needed them, they're coming, right?
That's so right.
There's great jobs being done in law enforcement around this country.
There you go. So, there you go. Well, look, a large part of what's happening in Central Virginia is because of your service for the past 20 years, your mom's service before that. And I mentioned this whole, this legacy thing. And I did say that you are a lot like your mom in that if you knew about any sort of honors or presentations or acknowledgement of what you've done, you probably wouldn't be here right now, which is the reason that you are here right now. And I want to share with you that I have decided to establish when I started doing this math, Richard, when I started looking at the fact that between Jan McTernan and Richard McTernan, again, almost half a century of service and that legacy that your mom established, I want everybody in Central Virginia to be aware of that legacy. So your mom is going to have a second reason to be very, very angry with me. And she will be livid. I know it wasn't just Lieutenant Jan McTernan Blue Friday honor, but what I decided to do was to establish something called the Jan McTernan Legacy Award.
That's awesome.
And it's going to be presented to somebody who has completed 20 years of service, is eligible to retire, or maybe has just retired, but has given back in that way. And when I started thinking about when we would present this, we're only going to present this probably once a year.
Okay.
You know, the Blue Friday honor, Lieutenant Jan McTernan Blue Friday honor is once a month, the final Friday of each and every month, because we got a lot of people out there doing that. But this is something different. And so this Jan McTernan Legacy Award, we're going to present once a year. I'm going to ask you, ask Michael, ask some of the other law enforcement leaders in Central Virginia to give me ideas and feedback. And we'll just kind of get together around a cup of coffee or something and say, hey, here's the folks that are in contention. What do we think? Good idea, bad idea? And we'll go from there. You're willing to do that?
Absolutely, 100%. Thank you. That's quite the honor.
All right. Well, there's another part to this, and that is that given that we established the Jan McTernan Legacy Award, we had to have the first ever recipient of the Jan McTernan Legacy Award. And that, Sonny, is you.
That's pretty awesome. Thank you, Jeff.
You are the first recipient, and I cannot for the life of me think of anybody more deserving.
Seeing my mom's name and my name on the same thing, that's pretty, trying not to get emotional.
Yeah. Yeah. So I want you to take that. I will also tell you, Congressman John McGuire has, as we speak, just entered into the congressional record on the floor of the House of Representatives, a story about this. So Jan McTernan, Richard McTernan, that award now part of the congressional record. And there will be a an official, it's very fancy. You're going to have to find some place to hang it up. Do not put this just in a closet. I refuse to let that happen, all right? So even if I have to go above your head, I will talk to Ginger. I want the congressional record up on the wall, and I want that displayed, man.
Absolutely.
So congratulations to you as the first recipient of the Jan McTernan Legacy Award. And you'll notice we don't have her title on there, and that's for a reason. Because everything that you talked about, how Jan came home, and she was mom,
right,
and she was wife, mm-hmm, and she was all about family. And it's not just her contributions to law enforcement, it is who she was as a human being. And she was, I will say it again, I won't get emotional, I hope, but mm-hmm, she was one of the finest people that I was blessed to know. I loved your mom with all my heart. I loved your dad with all my heart. They were just two of the best people to this day. Not that it compares to you or Michael, mm-hmm, but I miss them.
Yep.
I miss hanging out with them. But I am so proud of who it is that they've produced in this world with you and Michael and Kyle and Peyton. I mean, you know, these are great folks. So again, excuse me, Sonny. You are the first recipient of the Jan McTernan Legacy Award, and I congratulate you for that. I know you're thinking about other things, and anything that any of us can ever do, of course, you just reach out. But you have earned that in every respect.
Thank you very much. That really means a lot. It's a kind of a loss for words.
Well, then we'll leave it there. That is Acting Sergeant Richard McTernan. He is at the Richmond Police Department Training Academy as we speak. He has completed now 20 years of service, weighing what is next, looking at some sort of other options, other avenues. And he is the first recipient of the Jan McTernan Legacy Award. The legacy that Jan McTernan established in Central Virginia is without parallel, in my opinion. Service as a United States Marine, service in the Richmond Police Department. And as I said, once a year or thereabouts, we're going to present the Jan McTernan Legacy Award to somebody who has gotten their 20 years in. Maybe is staying in law enforcement, maybe is retiring out of the profession. That's kind of what this is designed for, more than active service, if you will. But we will have more of these as we move forward. Jeff Katz, News Radio, WRVA. Well, there you have it. Spend a couple of moments with Susanna Hoffs, if you don't mind. Pretty sure that whole legal matter has been resolved. Restraining orders, stay away. Yeah, you know, I mean, this stuff happens. What are you going to do? I was always such a huge Susanna Hoffs fan. I was a mark, as you might have said in my other vocation. Anyway, thanks again to everybody at the Richmond Police Department, in particular Lieutenant Steve McQuail and Captain Faith Flippo over at the Richmond Police Academy. There was a lot of coordination to pull off what you just heard. A huge amount of coordination. And moving forward, as we look at Central Virginia law enforcement folks with 20 years of service plus who are eligible to retire, they might very well be in line at some point to receive that Jan McTernan Legacy Award. I've already got a couple of ideas, and I've had a couple of folks reach out to me when they heard that this was going to be a thing, saying, how about, and all tremendous suggestions. But the way that we're going to make this work is that Richard and Michael and I will get together. We will get together as well with some of the leading law enforcement personnel in our area. We'll have a suggestion pile, right? We're going to have a lot of people that are suggested for this award, nominated for this award, and it's going to take a lot of examination and discussion, and then we'll figure out the right person. Not going to do it on a monthly basis at all. We're going to do it at the most once per year. So that's the 2025 honoree right there, period. We'll see how it plays out as we move forward. But congratulations again to Richard McTernan, who is most deserving for that award. Hey, tomorrow morning, 6 a.m., please make sure you're listening to Richmond's Morning News with Rich Herrera. And God willing, you and I get the chance to do this all over.